Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Chef's Story. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton at the International Culinary Center, and today I have a very hot chef with me, and not just a hot chef, it is almost impossible to get into his shop. I have Dominique Ancel, who created the Cronut. And Dominique, welcome.
Thank you,
Dorothy. I can't believe
Thank
you're
you for
here.
Having me here.
I can't believe you're here. And guess what? He brought a cronut. I'm so lucky.
Just one, though.
Just one. But it isn't like this cronut last in May, like, took the world by storm.
Yeah, it was about 2 months ago now.
2 months ago. Well, we're going to end the program talking about the cronut. But I just want to tell our listeners that Dominique, it should be no surprise that Dominique made such an incredible cronut, because in 2012 he was named by Dessert Professional magazine as one of the top 10 pastry chefs in the United States. In Time Out New York in 2010, top 10 pastry chefs you need to know. He was a finalist for the Outstanding Pastry Chef this year, 2013, by the James Beard Foundation. And then the Dominique Ancel Bakery, which is in his name, was named the best new bakery in 2012 by Time Out New York. And Metro Mix also called it the best bakery in 2012. And this was even before he created the cronut. So, Dominique, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. It's very exciting to have you here.
Very sweet. So, you were born in Paris. You're a real Parisian.
I was born very close to Paris, about like an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's like in a small town. Yeah, a small town very close to Paris, north of Paris.
What's the name of the town?
It's called Beauvais.
Beauvais.
Yeah. And there's a small airport there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And so, tell me, from the time you were little, were you into cooking? Or?
So, when I was little, I actually loved to cook with my dad in the kitchen, not with my mom, which is like pretty unusual. My dad was spent a lot of time cooking, and he was passionate about it. He was not a chef, but he loved like opening cooking books and start looking at recipes and going to market and like buying those like beautiful like fish and meat and try to make something nice.
So what were some of his like, good dishes that you remember?
Oh, I remember he was doing this rabbit with red wine and salsify. That was really, really delicious.
And something an American young kid would never have here. This is so
His fresh. Cookie was pretty random. He's making an amazing couscous.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like he's making his own.
With chicken?
Yeah, with chicken and like carrots, celery, and his own like mix of spices. Mm. It's pretty good. It's very random, but it's pretty good.
And what did your mother cook at all?
My mom cooked, but she was not. She didn't like it very much. And when she was cooking it, actually, it was not really good, believe me or not.
So how often would your father cook? Would he cook?
My father would cook like 4 or 5 times a week. I would always stay around and help, like peel carrots and potatoes, and like helping like clean dishes and.
Really? Yeah. Do you have siblings? Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have two sisters and one brother.
And did they like to cook too?
Not at all. They were never in the kitchen.
So then, as you were going through school, did you dream of being a chef?
I was not dreaming about it. I liked it, but I didn't know what it was like. Mm-hmm. So when I was 16, I had to decide either going to high school mm-hmm. or to go to start a job and learn something. Mm-hmm. And I decided on like starting my career. I was 16, and I started working in a restaurant. In a small restaurant where I was from, and it was a really good like fine dining small restaurant. Mm-hmm. We were only 6 to 8 employees, mm-hmm. and there I started washing dishes, sweeping the floor, and then doing like appetizers and desserts. And eventually I move on to the hotline very quickly. After about like 6 months to 8 months, they put me on the hotline and I was cooking with the chef.
And after,
I was wow. really, really young. And after a year, I was managing the hotline with the chef. I was replacing the sous chef that was gone at the time.
Whoa.
And it was really, really challenging for me and a lot of pressure. There was a tiny kitchen. We had no AC. We had a small grill where we were grilling all the meat. I was in charge of the meat and the fish. And my boss was doing all the garnish and plating everything with me. So it was a pretty busy restaurant, and
was it good training? Was he a good chef? Did he teach you good habits?
Well, my first boss was actually a school teacher. And I didn't have the best experience, but...
Wait, he was a school teacher cooking?
He was a school teacher that learned everything by himself. And he opened a restaurant that was very successful.
Oh.
And that was my first boss. I stayed in the same restaurant for 2 years. And after a year, he sold the restaurant. I had a new boss, which was a very high-trained professional chef. He worked in La Serre in Paris, Michelin star. Mm. And he really showed me, like, opened my eyes and opened my mind to what cooking was. This is where really, like, I fell in love. I started learning about, like, how to butcher a lamb, like a whole lamb, how to, like, make foie gras, how to make all the venison during the winter. It really, like, took me and showed me what cooking was about.
So were you the sous chef at this time?
My title was not a sous chef. I was apprentice. But I was I was running the kitchen like the sous chef was. Exactly. So that was a very unique experience and very challenging for a young kid of my age. I was 17.
Did he demote you? Did he bring someone in over you to run the kitchen?
No, I was running the kitchen until I left. And then he hired somebody else.
Okay, so but then you were working under him. What was the difference between someone who's not such a professional chef and a 2-star Michelin chef? What are some of the things that
the difference were different? Is huge.
Try to explain that to the people that are listening.
It's all about like your heart and what you give. It's about seeing someone that is like professionally trained and knows all the steps to guide you through a training and to really give you the passion. And it taught me how to love my job.
Really?
It really like taught me how to not to just to like what I was doing, but to love it.
How do you teach somebody that?
I don't know. I think it takes a lot of personal effort, really, to explain everything, to like take the time to show what cooking is about respecting the product, about how to transform something and make it very tasty, how to pair things together to make it very like unique and special. All the things, like, it's day after day work. It's every minute of your day, it's every hours of your day. You really learn and you move forward and get stronger and get faster at cooking and understanding the food, understanding what people like, seasoning. It is really like passionate to me, and it was really like a big jump in my career where I was like, wow, now after a year of like really like intense, like difficult time, after a year I start liking, and even more than liking, like really loving what I was doing.
So what did you do after that?
So after this, when I was at the restaurant, I was doing the pastries, appetizers, the hotline. I was doing a bit of everything. I was still washing the dishes, sweeping the floor.
No.
Yes, of course.
Because there were only six or...
Because we only had one dishwasher, and he was washing all the dishes for the restaurant, all the china and silverware.
Right.
So I was working at the time 16 to 18 hours a day, every single day, but Sunday.
So did you expect that at 16? Was that
no, not at all, but I left school, and I told my parents I wanted to start a job, and... In my mind, there was no room for failure. There was no room for like giving up. And I took it very seriously. And I took all the pain and all the hard work and all the good things as well, all the love and passion and good time, you know. When you're like done, you finish your service, you like serve like hundreds of people.
Were you a very disciplined young boy?
I was pretty disciplined, and I was very respectful of authority. Mm-hmm. And always I had my vision, my way of thinking that was a little bit different than anybody else.
Really?
But I was always listening and doing what people were asking me to do.
So after the two-star, or after this...
After the restaurant,
yes.
I decided on starting to learn how to bake. So that was the next step for me. At the restaurant, I was doing a lot of like small desserts. Like I remember this walnut cake. We were doing this like very simple walnut cake, but we had like a walnut spread from Ardèche in France. It's a region southeast that is specialized in like walnut and chestnut, and they had the best product. So we had this bread, and we were doing this chestnut cake that was very light and very fluffy. It was very simple with creme anglaise on the side, but it was so tasty. I actually tried to reproduce this pastry, and I could not. And still now, I'm like trying to figure out. I have the recipe, but if you don't have the right ingredients, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
If you don't have the special like walnut spread that's from there, it's a total like different recipe. So I started like learning about pastry at the restaurant, and I could feel the scientific aspect, and it was like you have room for creating new things with pastry. You have to be very precise, very disciplined, and I love this part of like cooking, which was like baking at the time.
Very organized.
Yeah, very
detailed.
Organized, very clean, detail oriented. You measure everything, you scale everything, you take temperature for everything. There's no cheating. If
yeah.
it doesn't work, there's a reason why, and it's a scientific reason. So I, after the restaurant, I decided to work in a bakery for a year to do another apprenticeship.
Or
yeah,
boulangerie.
Like both, they were doing boulangerie, yeah. Patisserie. They're doing bread, their own bread, and their own pâtisserie. They were specialized in brioche,
oh.
And they were known for having warm brioche all the time. It was called my brioche chaud. It's
oh.
like my
yeah.
warm brioche.
Yeah.
So every time you were coming, getting a brioche from there, it was hot from the oven.
Mm.
And this is something I always remember, and I will always remember. People were so happy and so excited just to hold a hot brioche
mm.
and going back home with it.
Mm.
So I stayed there for a year,
mm-hmm.
and that was a beautiful year.
Where was it in the same town?
In the same town, Beauvais. My boss and his wife were running the business, and his son and daughter-in-law were also in the kitchen in front of the house. So I had like four bosses at the bakery, but they were very, very lovely and very sweet, and they taught me a lot there as well.
Mm. And then
after that, I went to do my military service.
So in France, you have to do military
at my age, yes. I was one of the last year where it was
mandatory. I see.
So I decided to go there and do something special, do something unique, because, you know, this is what I love, like, not being like everyone. And ask them, well, I know there's like a military bases like all over the world. Can I go to one of them? And they were like, you know what? It's very difficult. Like, it's not for everybody, and you have to pass a bunch of tests before, which I did. I went to. They call you for 3 days, and you do all those military tests, like a written test, a physical test, and then they give you a destination or like an affiliation to a specific military camp. So I went there, and after like giving the results of my test, they asked me if I want to do to be in a special force.
Oh, the special forces? Really?
Yeah, and I was like,
you must have been good.
I'm not sure if it was good or like a little bit different than other people, but it took me like 2 seconds to answer, and I was like, no.
Oh, you didn't want to do it?
No, I didn't want to do it. I know like how like tough it is and special it is. And I really, really want to do to go to a different country
mm-hmm.
and see something else,
mm-hmm.
learn about different culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a chance to go to French Guiana, which is in South America,
mm-hmm.
just next to Brazil.
Uh-huh.
I stayed there for a year. And there I was, guess where I was? I was in the kitchen.
Did they know your background?
And they know your background, and it's actually a special, special mission that they give you. I was there to teach people how to cook in a professional kitchen in order for them to get a job after their military service. So the people there that was working were locals.
Oh.
And they were also French because it was French territory, but they were coming to military service to learn how to cook, and I was teaching them how to cook there.
So you're a teacher, well.
Oh, yeah. So I was a young teacher.
Here someday, huh? That would be great.
I came here already a few times.
To do the demos. I know you have. You've been very good supporter. So then, was that 2 years that you had a school?
That was a year.
A year in military service?
Then after that, I came back to France. And for my 3 years where I was apprentice, where I was making like $200 a month, $200-$300 a month, I had savings for 3 years. I had about like $2,000. Yeah, I had a plan. I had a plan that I will go be apprentice and then I'll go to my military service because I had no choice, and then I'll come back and work in Paris. That was my mission.
And
that was my goal.
And where did you want to work in Paris?
I had no idea. So I came back to France.
You wanted to work in patisserie?
I wanted to work in patisserie in Paris. So I had my $2,000 savings and I bought a car.
Okay, now we're going to stop right there because you're going to Paris and we're going to take a break and we're going to let the station tell everybody what they're listening to.
All right.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years, so it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Chef Story, and I'm Dorothy Cann Hamilton. And today my guest is Dominique Ancel, the famous creator of the cronut and his very well-regarded top bakeries, the Dominique Ancel tiny, tiny bakery that's impossible to buy anything. Those lines are so long. And we're inching our way to that story. But right now we're in the story with Dominique when he's going to Paris after he finished his military service. And you're around 20 years old at this time?
I was around 20 years old. I had all my savings from when I was apprentice. I had $2,000. I bought a car and decided just to go to Paris, drive there, not knowing where I was going, not knowing anyone, but I knew it was there. I knew it was something there for me. So I print out a bunch of resumes. I drove around without like even a map, and I drop off resumes in bakeries. And just after a day, like 4 or 5 people contacted me. I'm like, do you want a job? Are you free now? I got a job for you.
Wow.
So I took a job in a small boulangerie, patisserie in 17th. Mm-hmm. I stayed there for 4 months, and then I decided to move on and look what was around. Look what was better for me. And I found this pastry shop that was called Pelletier. It was at the time one of the oldest, one of the best patisserie in Paris. They were not doing any bread, but just pure patisserie. And people really loved it. I worked there for a year. And then after this year, I still want to challenge myself. I found like another job, something more challenging, something better, stronger for me. And I found Fauchon. Fauchon, Place de la Madeleine, it's one of the highest, like high-end bakeries
in the world.
In the world, and especially in Paris. So I went there once again. It was in 1999. I went there with my resume. I dropped off a resume with the manager, and I was like, can I see the chef? I'm looking for a job. And she was like, yeah, let me see if he's here. And he saw my resume. After 5 minutes, he asked me to come downstairs. That was my
interview.
And he was like, when are you free? I was like, anytime you want. He was like, okay, you start next week.
Well, so what was it like in the kitchen at Fauchon? How different was it from the other?
So when I started at Fauchon, I was one of the 10 people that were hired just for holiday season. So from September to December, Fauchon was hiring like 10 more people just to answer the demand of the high volume. All people want pastry for the holidays. I was one of them. And after just a week, they called all of us, the 10 of us, and they told us they would keep 3 people. And after 2 months, they called all of us and told us they would keep 1 of us only.
And guess who?
Guess who it was. So I was really, really challenged, and I really wanted to be the best. I was working very fast, very clean, very organized. And my chef called me after, like towards the end of my 4 months, and he was like, well, I have good news for you. I talked with the sous chefs, the three sous chefs, and we all like you, and we would like to offer you a job with us. And my answer was like, okay, it sounds good. Let me think about it. And at the time, I wasn't sure if I wanted to stay. I wasn't sure, like, if I want to see something else. And then my chef looked at me and was like, really? You're going to think about it? You know how many people would, like, die just to stay here? I was like, I'm sorry, chef. Like, I'll give you an answer tomorrow. And I just want to make sure I make the right decision for myself. And I came back. I was like, I want this job. I want to be here. And I'm going to show you I'm the best. And he offered me the job. And I stayed for 8 years. And just after, I was 21 at the time. And just after 6 months of me being there, one of the chef de partie left, and he asked me to take over. I was still pretty young, and I had six people under me.
You know what? They keep making you a manager. Okay? You know, the cream rises to the top, as we say.
Yeah.
So what made you leave Fauchon after 8 years?
So 8 years, you know, I was chef de partie, then a sous chef. We moved from one location to expanding to have 12 locations, and then we came back to one shop. I was a corporate pastry chef. I was in charge of developing shops around the world. I opened in different countries, trained a lot of people. And then I was like 28, and I thought to myself that the world is big. The world is like really like beautiful. There's so many things to learn, and I want to have an experience in a different country. I started looking around, looking on the internet, and seeing like website where people will hire like chefs in different countries. And I was really attracted by the States, especially by New York. I came here like long time ago, and I fell in love with New York right away. As soon as I got to the city and I started walking around, I felt so comfortable, and I felt like it was a city for me, you know?
It's an international city. It really is.
And it makes like a big difference for me to be in New York than any other cities, you know? So I came here. I look around, and I saw that Daniel was looking for a pastry chef. So I contacted a friend of mine who was the pastry chef at Le Bernardin at the time, Florian Bélanger.
Yes.
And I called Florian. I was like, hey, do you know Daniel? Like, is it a good place? He was like, yeah, it's amazing, but it's very very challenging. You know, it's very difficult kitchen to work at. And Daniel has very high expectation. I was like, okay, I can do it. Like, I won't do it. And he was like, okay, you sure? Like, I can call him and ask him if he would like to meet you. And Florian called Daniel, and Daniel called me right away. We chat for like maybe 15, 20 minutes over the phone. And then once we hung up the phone, his HR director called me. She had booked a flight for me, a hotel, and they were waiting for me to come to do testing.
Wow, they flew you over for the tasting.
Yeah, that was pretty quick. I flew over for a few days. I did a tasting with Daniel. Daniel loved it. And 8 weeks later, I was in New York with my two suitcases.
And as the executive pastry chef?
I was executive pastry chef at Daniel.
Whoa.
I was 28, and I had about 10 people at the time in the kitchen.
So what was the kitchen like in America? I mean, Danielle is French, and we all think he runs a very French kitchen. But how different was it
actually
from running a kitchen in Paris?
I would say yes and no. Like, kitchen in Paris, everything is like kind of like military-based. It's very like structured on the way that there's a chef and then a sous chef. And then you don't see the chef much in the kitchen. The sous chef like handles everything. And you have like many sous chefs and then chef de partie. It's very like structured. Here, even if it was a French kitchen at Daniel, what I love is that everyone was cooking. Everyone was working harder. Everyone was pushing each other to be the best, to make something different. And I remember like coming to New York and seeing Daniel in the kitchen like cooking with everybody, and all the corporate chefs like working very hard. I was like, wow, this is no joke.
Yeah.
Like, people are in the kitchen, they work hard, and then they do their office job, you know? Mm-hmm. People like constantly push themselves to create something new, mm-hmm. to organize better the kitchen, to service customers. And I loved it right away. I felt like super comfortable right away.
So at Fauchon, were you creating desserts there?
Yeah, with a chef, I was creating desserts. I was mostly in charge of opening shops around the world. So I was taking the whole pastry collection from Paris and reproducing it in different countries.
Oh, so you got to travel around the
world. I got to travel, yeah. I went to Kuwait, I went to Moscow, and I went to a few different countries. I was also training the chefs in Paris. So twice a year, I was...
I was teaching again,
exactly.
Teaching, creating...
That's the story of my life.
Yeah, pushing to the top. It's incredible. Yeah, it's who you are.
Yeah,
I mean,
twice a year I was organizing big conferences with all the chefs, and I was showing them all the new items and all the new pastries and packaging and new product to order. And it was very challenging for me at the time because my English was not that good, and everyone was from animals. People from Japan, from Qatar, from...
Did you miss the actual cooking?
I started missing it because I was less and less in the kitchen.
Yes.
I had this feeling in my body where I was like, oh, I need something else.
Right.
I'm missing something, and right. It's really touching the food and finishing beautiful pastries and working with your hands.
Right.
It's a special feeling.
It's tactile.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Your soul is in your fingers, touching. So when you were at Danielle, how creative did you get with the pastries? Do you think being in America made you freer to do things with the desserts?
I think that working for Danielle and being in New York gave me a lot of freedom for me to explore myself and come up with a range of pastries that could be inspired from anything or from anywhere. I was using a lot of different ingredients, techniques. I was free with that. The design of the menu, design of the pastries, and Daniel trusted me. Daniel knew that I had good taste, and he loved the desserts I was doing. And people loved it too, and I was very free. I was growing as a chef. And dishes after dishes, I was getting better and thinner and cleaner and faster. Learning how to make a good dish, it's not really easy, especially when you work in a high-pressure kitchen like this, when you have to constantly change dishes and constantly train your staff on how to make them, and also teach the front-of-the-house people how to sell it, how to explain which dish it is and what's the idea, what's the inspiration behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So working in the kitchen at Danielle gave me a lot of freedom, totally opened my mind and my heart to what I could do, and I will always challenge myself to do something more, something else.
You have. So then, actually, we're going to take a little break here because I want to get into the Cronut, and I want to get into, it's a big, it takes a lot of courage to leave a structured, successful job and go off and start your own business.
That's
true. This whole entrepreneurial thing is intriguing to me. So the next part of our interview is going to be a little more in depth. So we're going to cut off a little early here, and we'll be right back. Chef Story, and I'm Dorothy Cann Hamilton. We're sitting here in Soho, New York City at the International Culinary Center, and I'm speaking with one of the most feted pastry chefs in New York, if not the whole United States, if not the whole world, Dominique Ancel, who worked at Fauchon and then Danielle here in the city, and has his eponymous bakery called Dominique Ancel Bakery. Welcome. Your neighbor, because you're...
Thank you. I'm just a few blocks away.
Just a few blocks away, so it was easy for you to come down. So, how did you decide to leave Danielle, and how did you decide to open your own place?
Well, opening a bakery for me was a dream. When I was a kid, I really wanted to open my business. And I love having, like, working in a bakery environment. And I always, like, told myself that someday I will do something for myself and something special. Working for Daniel was an amazing experience. He's a great man. He's a great mentor. And always, like, push me to do a little bit more, always push me and challenge me to be different, open my eyes to like what New Yorkers are like, what Americans like to eat because it's different. And taking the step of leaving Daniel is not an easy one. When you're with someone strong like this, you can only like feel strong and you feel great about yourself, about very, very proud about where you work, who you work for. And
after you, they got the 3 Michelin stars.
That's right. Yeah,
right.
That was a big accomplishment.
Yeah, for you to get 3 Michelin
stars. That was
stars.
Huge, huge victory. Yes. In like in a chef's life, that's the biggest you can dream of,
yes.
Having the 2 Michelin stars.
Yes.
And when you're part of it,
yes.
Even if I was just a pastry chef there, being a part of it.
But just the pastry chef. I mean, that is part of the 3 stars. If the pastry
yeah,
was not 3 stars,
true.
They would not get 3 stars.
That's true. But Daniel was always like very very kind, like very close to his chefs, and very like
family
oriented. Like if anything would happen, Daniel would like talk to us and really like look at all the dishes that were coming out from the kitchen. You know, I think it's the whole team,
yes,
the whole team effort, and we won it, and it's something big in a chef's career, and
yes.
Being a part of it is something amazing.
So now you're leaving the 3 stars that you earned. How could you take that? You know, what propelled you to take that?
It's a lot of pressure. There was a lot of pressure on myself. I was leaving to start this business on my own, and not having Daniel on my side, not having the corporate world, not having something strong that already exists. It's a lot of pressure. So then you start dealing with all the HR, all the legal stuff, all the
business
aspect of a bakery, of the production, of like hiring, training the staff front of the house, about like fixing everything. I don't know how many times I fixed the bathroom at the bakery, but
right.
You know, like
it brings you back to the days when you were cleaning.
Exactly,
and
it brings
and
you back when you're like a kid and you're
yes.
16 and
you
have to do everything yourself.
So tell me, how long had you been conceiving it? What was the, you know, you had in your mind exactly what you wanted to do when you opened it. Where did you get the money from? Who, do you have partners? How did you conceive it?
So, while I was at Daniel, I was looking for like about like few months, and I found this this opportunity. I had a designer and someone I was doing my construction. And we had a meeting somewhere to see a space close to Union Square. And the place was not really good. And my designer had his office in Soho, actually. And on his way back, he took the subway and he saw a space that could work for me. And he called me up. He was like, hey, maybe we should look at this. It's interesting. So in the beginning, I was like, yeah, you know, like Soho, like, I don't know if it's the right place for me. I don't know if it's like the right target for me. But I can consider it. I can see it. So I went to see the space, and he had the little garden in the back. I could like build a small kitchen, an open kitchen, and I fell in love with the space. So I signed on the lease, and then I told Daniel that I would be leaving, and this is how I started it.
Oh.
And it was a year and a half ago.
Yeah. So had you saved money to do
Yeah,
this?
I had saved money for a long time, and my girlfriend partner like helped me out as well.
Yeah. And so did you know what you wanted to the did you know what you wanted the bakery to look like, what you were going to actually sell? Did you have it all planned out for years?
I've been thinking about it for like many years.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
To me it was like somewhere where you can have some beautiful pastries, somewhere where you could sit down without having a waiter, just enjoy your pastry, go sit down somewhere where it was not too French, just like relaxed atmosphere with nice music, beautiful pastries. You grab your coffee, you go have a seat. You can stay as long as you want, and then you can just leave, you know?
How many square feet is the bakery?
We have 2,500.
That's That's quite big, actually.
It's quite big. Yeah, we have a big garden in the back. Yeah. We have the greenhouse with the AC inside, so people can sit summer, winter.
And how big is the kitchen?
The kitchen is actually really, really small. It's half of the size of the office.
So I would say that would be about 10 feet by...
Maybe...
20, maybe 15, 10 by 15.
Yeah, something like this. So yeah. We have one table, only one table. And on the table, we have the dough sheeter, a small dough sheeter.
Oh, my God. And how many burners do you have? And how many ovens?
We have induction and only two burners.
Two burners.
Yeah.
And what comes out of there every day?
Everything comes out of there. We do our own ice cream and sorbet. We do all our viennoiserie. Everything is been in-house.
But how many pieces do you make a day?
It's hard to tell. Probably thousands.
Thousands.
We do like all of our fresh baked items, cookies, cannoli, pastries. We also do, we have a small selection of sandwiches, soup, salad. So it's a large selection for a very small space.
How many people working in that little kitchen?
Now it's about 8 people.
8 people?
So we have like 3 shifts now. Three different shifts.
So midnight to 8 you're baking.
Exactly.
Right. Wow. And so you have one person working in the room and one cleaner, or are you still
inside the kitchen we have the dishwasher area.
In that small kitchen.
So, you know, it's exactly what I was saying earlier. It's like being an apprentice again.
Yes.
You have to work in very tight space.
Right.
But you know what? It's sometimes better than to work in bigger kitchen because everything is there. You don't have to run anywhere. You have to, like, look for things for hours. Like, everything is here. So if it's not here, it's missing.
That's what I always say about a New York kitchen, which is so small. You stand in one place and you can touch everything.
Exactly. You can touch the four corners almost.
That's right. So tell me, what was the first week like when you opened?
Oh,
was it a disaster or was it a dream for you?
The first week was a dream, and it was very, very stressful and very, very intense. But it was a beautiful week.
Was it successful from day one?
It was successful from day one. We were only six at the bakery, six people. I remember peeling off the paper from the window, removing the paper, and seeing people outside. And I was so nervous. I was so excited. And our first customer, actually, his name is Mike.
Yeah.
He signed a dollar bill for me. And he comes back all the time to buy, like, tons of pastry. He's very, very sweet.
Oh.
And he's been supportive since day one.
He was our first customer. Oh, that's fantastic. And so what patisserie viennoiserie did you start with, and how did you get the formula right on exactly what you should be selling, or have you had to change what you're selling, and how did you come up with some of these creations?
So in the beginning I thought I would do some stuff that I liked. Like the Quinyaman, we call it the DKA, it stands for Dominique's Quinyaman. It's like this flaky caramelized croissant. It's like slightly gooey in the center, very, very flaky, and it has nice crisp, like shell, caramelized shell on the outside. I used to do it at Daniel for manager meeting, and people like loved it. They were crazy about it. Then I was like, this is good. This is what I was doing in Paris, like something similar. I changed the recipe a little bit. You guys try it. I brought it to the meeting, and people were like,
I just bit into one, and I would say it is like a palmier, or maybe Americans know it as elephant ear.
Yeah.
You know, that's the crispiness on the outside, but the inside has a little more, not cakey. I would say, you know, when you have a very good flaky pie crust that has a bit of, meat to it, like structure to it. It's got that nice, and the butteriness and the caramelization and the stickiness to it. It's like it's a dream.
So the Quinyaman was something like very unique. Like New Yorkers didn't know Quinyaman, and we introduced it at the bakery, and people really loved it.
Mm.
We've been selling out since day one, and it's been a year and a half. And every single day we sell out of Quinyaman. People love it. It's been named like one of the best dishes. It's something very special to me. It's in my heart, and I have one every morning.
Yeah, you're so thin. If I had, oh my gosh, I couldn't. I I don't think I could work there. I'm, you know, I'm pretty good at the school here, mm-hmm. watching what I eat, but not this.
Not today.
not today. No, I'm munching along with a bunch of stuff here. So tell me, how many creations have you? How many pastry creations have you created for the bakery?
It's hard to count now. It's only been a year and a half.
Yeah.
But like every 4 to 6 weeks, we change the menu and we incorporate new dishes. Every holidays, we do new signature items just for the holidays.
So do you sit and think about, oh my gosh, let me try this? And because most pastry shops you go to have pretty much standard.
Yeah, everyone has standard.
You know,
so
classic,
the way I run the bakery is very unique and special. We run it more like almost like a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
where we change the menu very often. We do a lot of fresh baked items. Like we have all our miniature madeleines, we bake them mm. fresh to order.
Mm.
We have cookies that comes out of the oven every 30 minutes. The DK, we bake like 6 to 8 batches every day. So there's constantly something hot coming out from the oven. I had this like memory of being a child and going to the bakery with my mom and my grandma at least 3 to 4 times a day. Just like minimum 3 times a day. To get the hot bread that was coming out from the oven.
Right.
The bakery had like one bread oven that was right behind the counter, and every like 30 minutes you could see the hot bread coming out from the oven. It was something natural, you know. You grew up in France, you wake up, you go get your bread, you come back home, you eat breakfast with the bread. You go to the bakery for lunch, you come back home, you eat your lunch with the bread, and then in the afternoon you go get some more bread, and then for dinner. So it's something normal that everyone does.
Having
something like hot and warm from the oven,
right.
and something fresh just baked,
the
it's very special to me. And I wanted to bring this spirit and
this concept
to the bakery. So having like beautiful pastries, always something hot from the oven, somewhere where it was like relaxed, mm-hmm. where you could sit, enjoy your coffee and your pastry.
So tell me, I'm digging into the cronut here. How did this all come about? How did you conceive it? When did it first enter your mind?
So the cronut was to challenge myself a little bit and the team. I wanted to do a donut, but I didn't want to do like the classical American donut. I wanted to bring some French spirit. I wanted to do like to add nice touch. So I worked on the laminated dough that is similar to croissant, but not quite exactly. I worked on a recipe for about 2 months and 10 different batches in order to get the right perfect consistency, something that could fry quickly, easily, without being too greasy, something that where the layers will not slide off, something that you could fill with a cream and still have this nice moist texture.
So it's deep fried?
It's deep fried, yes.
You know, taste to me a bit like a cruller, not a cakey cruller,
yeah,
but a flaky cruller.
Yeah.
It's really addictive.
So the texture is very unique. We're very seasonal with it. We change the flavor very often. Every month we have a new flavor. The first month was vanilla and rose. The second month was lemon and maple. And for this month, blackberry and lime.
Mm. But it's not quite a croissant.
It is not a croissant. It's very similar. The texture is similar.
It's not as much butter as a croissant.
No, there's less.
Much less.
Mm-hmm.
Much less. And it's shaped like a donut.
It's shaped like a donut. It's glazed like
it's
a donut.
It's glazed
and you put
like
a little
donut.
Topping on top.
Why do you think people went so crazy over it?
It's still like hard for me to say why people went crazy for it. I really thought it was going to be a new addition to the menu, a nice something nice that people will like and recognize. And I think it's one of the part why people really love it. We had a mention on Grab Street, which is a blog, and people like caught it. They start talking about it, and in a time frame of like a day, they had over 140,000 people that opened this link, and they had an increase of 300% of traffic on their website. So they call us and they were like, you know, you should tell Dominic to make a few more for tomorrow. Like a lot of people look at it and you guys should be busy. And the next day we had like 20 people waiting outside. And I was like, oh, there's a lot of people this morning before we even opened the doors. We sold out in like 25 minutes. We had like 50. And then the third day, there were like over 100 people. And I was like, whoa, what's going on? And it went viral in the space of like a day. And everyone was talking about it. Everyone wanted to see it. I think the name is fun. It's something like unusual. Uh-huh. I think the idea, people can definitely see it. They can picture it. They can see what it would taste like. And it's really good. And
it is really good. It's really good. So what's the future for the Cronut?
The future for the Cronut, I'm not sure exactly. I think it's a good product that I'm going to keep doing.
Have you gotten a lot of offers to open franchises?
Yes, I've had a lot of people approaching me and asking me to open franchise. But like everything I've done in my life, it's very important for me to take each step at a time and to have like a strong idea of what I want to do and how I want to expand and keep the very high standard that I set at the bakery and to have, you know, good quality product and give a good experience to my customers.
Did someone try to steal the name?
Some people have used the same name. Actually, we've trademarked the name Cronut.
Good, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, we've trademarked the name Cronut. It was.
Did you do that before, or did you do it after the New York the Grub Street article?
We did before. Okay. I was actually with my lawyers. My lawyers were incorporating the trademark. They were doing a trademark for Dominican Soul Bakery, and they came and they were like, you know, maybe this is a good product, like. It sounds very fun. Maybe it's going to be very popular. I can like trademark it for you. I was like, okay, why not? And
that was a smart
move. that was a good one. A lot of things that people don't, chefs don't know, it's that a trademark is not to avoid everyone to make to make a copy or to make like an inspired dessert. A trademark is really to protect our product and make sure that other
people are
people
not making
exactly making the
ones.
Same product and thinking that we are affiliated to this.
Right.
So there's a lot of, you know, I'm not the first one to fry croissant dough. I'm not the first one to like do something like innovative, but the name trademark is protected, and I don't want people to get confused with what's out there. Our product is special.
It's very, very special. Well, you know what? We've run out of time, but I'm glad I got to eat the Cronut before we did. I can't thank you enough. I can't wait to get over there.
Thank you. Please come soon.
I didn't realize you had sandwiches and lunch.
Yeah, we have sandwiches, soup, salad.
I'm there. I've been speaking to Dominique Ancel of Dominique Ancel Bakery, which is located, what's your address?
It's 189 Spring Street.
189 Spring Street
between Sullivan and Thompson.
Oh, between Sullivan. It's such a hot neighborhood.
It is. It is really very nice. Very, very beautiful neighborhood.
Yeah, great neighborhood. And you have the little garden in the back, which
exactly.
is even better. Well, thanks for coming today.
Thank you for having me.
And this is Chef's Story, Dorothy Cann Hamilton, thanking our producers, Jack Inslee and Robin Cohen. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.